y'all. I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 315.
And y'all, I had sweet tea at dinner, so I might be wilding out.
Y'all, she was like, I mean, it was like Colby was doing comedy hour.
She was
fucking cracking up at him. They were roasting me. I was like, I did not fucking sign up for this. I do not like this Sam I Am. Because that motherfucker, Colby, Donna too, but Colby, y'all, I have been so fucking tired lately. Like, I go through these waves where I just get for a couple of, like a week or so, it's like there's no amount of sleep on the planet that will suffice. And I'm in one of those stages right now. So I went to bed before Colby and I had my infusion going. So I had kind of woken up, but I've gotten so good at taking it out while I'm half asleep.
Y'all, and she has like 5 needles.
Yeah, so like I will just be kind of like awake enough to like lift it up and be like, okay, it's done. Take it out. Like I even literally poked myself in the finger with the needles and said, ouch. And Colby said, what happened? I said, I poked myself. And like took it all out, laid it down, and was immediately back asleep. 0.3 seconds, which felt like 4 hours later. But apparently, I learned at dinner, it was 0.3 seconds later. Colby grabbed my foot to tell me something. And the rage that he unleashed in me for waking me up, I was like, why did you wake me up? And he went to tell me something about, like, I'm going to give this door to blah, blah, blah. I was like, I don't care. And like, went back to sleep.
Cue Aladdin, who disturbs my slumber.
He also makes fun of me because y'all know I've been wearing muumuus since, well, I guess it's been about 2 years now that I've been wearing muumuus. But anyway, especially having my infusions, my muumuu has to be up a little bit because the cord is only so long for the little, you know, IV line things. After I took my thing out, I apparently was pulling my gown down, didn't realize it. And he, what did he say I do? A seal mating call.
Yeah,
a seal mating call because I roll side to side to pull it down. I was like, this motherfucker.
She's just wallowing in the...
Literally every night when we're laying in bed and I get my CPAP on and I, you know, apparently do a seal mating call, roll side to side to pull my thing down. I got to fix my socks and then I got to make sure the pillows that are at my feet are straightened and then all this stuff. He literally every night he goes, I've never in my life.
I could see it.
I'm Princess in the Pea. Like when I'm going to bed, I am Princess in the Pea. Everything has to be just right. And then.
Which apparently she snores even with her CPAP on again.
Yeah. He like threw that gem out at dinner too. I said something. He goes, well, you snore. I said, why didn't you tell me? That's probably why I'm so damn tired. I'll change my mask out tonight.
Oh, God. It was funny, y'all. Well, I don't have a significant other to roast me, but I roast myself all the time. But I signed up to be a foster, and so far I've got past the first
of a dog. Hold the phone. Not of a child.
You know what? That didn't even cross my mind. Literally, I was like, yeah. What?
Like, pop the brakes.
Yes, of a dog.
And a very specific dog.
Well, yeah. So they do Labradoodles and Golden Doodles because y'all know my skin allergy. So I can't just foster any dog because then I'll be, you know, back where I was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I've got through the first part. So going to the second part. So hopefully that works out. And I'll have a little companion until, you know, they find their forever home. There's one that I've been really wanting, but she's in Ohio, and that's a long way away.
Yeah.
But she's so cute, and she just looks so sweet, and she needs help.
Well, cue the Sarah McLachlan shit.
Also, that says so much about my dating habits, too. They're so cute, and God, they need help.
Big facts. You are a fixer.
I am. But at least I see that. That's the first step. Also, I have therapy tomorrow. I'm sure I'll talk about it.
I was just about to ask, when's your next session? Were you going to tell him you started therapy? You just going to drop that little gym and not tell him anything about it?
Well, I've only had one session so far. But it's really cool so far. Love the person. Yeah.
We finally got the bedroom and the bathroom done. Well, mostly. It's painted. Everything's where it belongs. I'll post a picture of the bathroom vanity because that is my favorite.
Oh my God, it looks so good.
I wish I would have had a better before picture. I wonder if I could go back on the Zillow listing because I didn't change anything to that when I painted and, you know.
It's still a good before photo.
Well, you just can't see like the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, the painting is done. But let me just tell y'all, the people who owned this house before did us fucking dirty on the vanity. We had to take a fucking thing to it.
Chainsaw?
No. I mean, I don't know what the word is, but I know it ain't that.
Well, that's what you look like, that you did.
Well, that's basically what we did.
Horror movies, like in the haunted houses, the people who chase you with the chainsaws.
No, we used a sawzall, but that's what we used.
That's so funny because when I said that and you're like, no, I was like, I wonder if this is it. Because, you know, home renovation shows, that's my jam.
So while Colby was cutting it, y'all, the comedy of errors that is our lives. Well, first of all, before we decided that we had to cut everything off, he was unhooking all the pipes. Y'all.
Don't. No, no, no. She's not going to tell you what happened. Continue.
No, I'm telling them. Y'all know what happened based on Donna's reaction. He handed me a pipe and there were two roaches crawling on the pipe. Like the little ones that come from the fucking city sewer. Little roaches. I gagged. Then one was crawling on Colby's leg.
Oh my God, you didn't tell me this.
Yes, I did. You didn't read. You must have blacked out reading the text messages. One was crawling on Colby's leg and I had to flick it off and step on it. The gags that I gagged during this whole process.
Oh, we just ate dinner and it's right there. Oh, God.
Y'all, it was. I was standing there like jazzercising because I felt like they were crawling on my legs. And he was like, what are you doing? I was like, I just feel like they're crawling on my legs.
Oh, my God. Well, one, I've been like, well.
Burn the whole house down.
Yep. Burning the house down and returning Colby to his parents because he's tainted now.
He was cracking up because he was like, I came back in. He's like, where'd you go? And I was like, I went and got the spray. Because we have like one, this big, like, that you like.
You with.
What do you call it? You pump it and you spray it. Y'all, the amount of spray that I sprayed in that area, I sprayed it up the pipe. But he ended up doing like a little glove on it and doing it because we left it uncovered for a little while. But I sprayed that trash can. I sprayed everything. Whoa. Y'all, I gagged so much. He was like, you are not cut out to be a plumber. And I was like, no.
Hell no.
I know I'm not.
Mm-mm. I learned that from Mario and Luigi.
Oh, and then, so he's using the sawzall. He was nervous about it because he was like, if I hit the pipe, because we're doing this at like 8 o'clock at night. Meanwhile, he's literally laying on the ground, unhooking it, got called into work. Thankfully, they were like, actually, you don't have to go because we were elbows deep in roaches. And anyway, meanwhile, there were literally two. But he's like, if I hit this pipe, we're going to have to go outside. We know where the water, like main water cutoff is, but it's like always overgrown. So you have to like dig it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, we're screwed if I hit this pipe because I'm going to have to go cut the main water off, blah, blah, blah. Y'all, every so often he would be like doing it and it would like kick and he would hit the pipe for like just a second and it would like kick back. Well, one time he did it and it kicked back. Water started spewing everywhere. I was like, he fucking hit the pipe. He hit the pipe. He hit the pipe. And meanwhile, this is like literally a 0.3 seconds, but it was like slow motion. Water goes up to the ceiling. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And he's like, I hit the valve. I hit the valve. And he was able to just close it off. Like he had literally just like bumped it and it opened instead of, oh God. My whole life flashed before my eyes.
This is giving me anxiety.
You should have lived it. But we got it up. Everything looks great. I don't have like decorations and stuff. And then two places over the new nightstands, I was going to put mirrors. Well, one of them was broken. I literally checked two of the four because I got four of them from Walmart. Freaking cheap because they were all on sale. Checked two of the four, but the two that I didn't check, one of them was fucking broken. So went to go order a replacement. And one, they doubled in price because they were on sale. And two, they were out of stock. So I just returned them both. And I don't know what the hell I'm going to do.
She needs y'all's help.
I need somebody to design my bedroom. But it is so much bigger now with that light paint gone.
Oh my gosh.
Dark paint gone. You get the point.
Yeah. But also just how you have the bed turned too.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Well, you know who else is making a huge difference in our lives? Patreoners! Thank you so much, Vanessa C. from California.
Corinne M. from California.
Oh, Melissa H. from Georgia.
Hannah L. from South Carolina.
Lindy M. from Indiana.
Amanda K. from Kentucky.
Deborah S. from Mississippi.
And Pamela J. from Wisconsin.
Hey, if y'all want an episode shout out like all of these people and all the extra nonsense that they're getting over on Patreon, like an extra episode a week. And depending on what tier you're in, bloopers, discount on merch, plus a thank you card with stickers, all the things, head on over to patreon.com/theapcpodcast. And Deborah, be looking out for me every couple of weeks down in the UN. I do be working down there sometimes. Before we get into Donna's story, this episode is sponsored by Care Of.
If y'all don't know, Care Of is a health and wellness company that ships high-quality personalized vitamins, supplements, and powders conveniently to your door every month.
All you do is take a short, simple online quiz about your lifestyle, your health goals, and Care Of will give you a doctor-backed recommendation. It's seriously that freaking easy. And even better, you can always go back and redo the quiz so that you can change up your routine and adjust what you're doing as needed.
Also, Care Of makes it to where your vitamins are on the go, convenient. They're in daily packets. And what I love is that they always have your name on it and then either a quote or, you know, something like that. And it's just something to start your day on the right foot.
I love how individualized Care Of is, not only, like Donna said, having your name on the packets. So if multiple members of your family all have Care Of packets and you just dump a bunch in a bag because you're going on vacation or, you know, taking them on the go, you know whose is whose, because Care Of is also individualized to what your needs are based on that quiz. So what the focus of Donna's regimen is and the focus of mine may be completely different, and Care Of tailors that to our needs.
It's not always just about the vitamins that you can take on the go. They also have protein powders that they offer. I also get my probiotics from there and prebiotics.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just about to say. And the protein powders are on the way for me, and I'm super excited to try that. But for me, I just like having all of my vitamins and stuff in one little thing, so I'm not having to, you know, every single bottle and go into the store and be like, okay, which one do I choose? There's 14 vitamin Ds. Like, which one do I need? They take the guesswork out of it and they stop you from having to go get your vitamins because it's all delivered to you. You just open your little packet and take them. If you want to skip the trip to the pharmacy and get the doctor back recommendations, head on over to takecareof.com and enter code CREEP50 for 50% off your first Care Of subscription.
That's takecareof.com. TakeCareOf.com and enter code CREEP50 for 50% off your first Care Of subscription.
One more time, that's TakeCareOf.com and enter code CREEP50 for 50% off your first Care Of subscription.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Eunice Cole, who was also known as Goody Cole. And if you know anything about me, you know, when I hear the name Eunice, I think of one movie.
Girl, she's the man.
Yes. Oh, but this is definitely not the same person. But every time I would write Eunice, I would say, I'm so there, it's insane. This Eunice was born in 1590 in England. Even though Eunice was born into a family that was the exact opposite of wealthy, she found love in a hopeless place. She ended up getting married to William Cole, and they both worked as indentured servants. Now, in 1638, they finished their agreement. Like, their boss had let them off early. They just had to pay an extra fee, and then they were free. So they set sail for America, and they landed in Boston, Massachusetts. Now, the reason they went there, I believe, is because their boss at the time had a business there, So that's the place they knew of. But also, everyone who was leaving England was going to that area. Now, they ended up in Exeter, New Hampshire. And it was this new colony that was being established by Reverend John Wheelwright, which was very hard for me to say. And he was like a Puritan clergyman. Now, I don't know why they started following him or whatever, because that really wasn't their beliefs or anything. But he ended up getting banished. And so then Eunice and William moved to Hampton, New Hampshire. And that was in 1643. Now, they were given like 40 acres of land, so they were able to make some money with that, and William also worked as a carpenter. But the thing is, Eunice wasn't what society deemed a lady should be. And they were not well off, but they were not also poor. So they were in that lower middle class where, you know, they were too poor to live how they wanted to, but too well off to be considered poor. Anyway, Eunice just rubbed people the wrong way. I feel like maybe because she had grown up dealing with poverty and always being in the lower class and then being an indentured servant, you know, she always had to, you know, quote, know her place and shit like that. So now she could speak her mind, she could stand in her truth, and that's what she did. Eunice was known to be, quote, foul-mouthed and disagreeable. And she wasn't well kempt, or however you say that.
Okay, I see you, Eunice. I feel that.
Literally, I say that in just a second, because she would also talk to herself. And I said, are they describing us? Cue TikTok. Is this play about us?
Yes. Unkempt? Foul mouth? What was the other thing? Asshole?
Basically, disagreeable.
Yeah.
If you've heard Carrie at all... you know.
Literally described myself yesterday as an ogre. Like that, I feel the unkempt.
But yeah, I was like, I mean, also she just sounds like normal, you know, but yeah. Anyway, you know, she wasn't what the ladies should have been, quote unquote. Also, they called her Goody because when you were of a lower class, you would be called like Good Wife Eunice Cole.
Mm-hmm.
And so they shortened it to Goody Cole. Now, Eunice was actually charged with slander in 1645, but I couldn't find out what she said. I could not find it. And then her and William also were charged with stealing pigs, and Eunice ended up biting the constable. But again, I don't know how that escalated or anything. But they weren't accused, they weren't found guilty of stealing the pigs or anything like that. But because of this, you know, neighbors accused her of being a witch.
Of course they did.
Mm-hmm. Then one day, it seemed like they were proven right. So Thomas Philbrick, one of their neighbors, said that she had cursed his cows because they were grazing on her land. And now there's two cows that she called. And she was like, if they continue to eat my grass, I hope that the grass is going to poison them and they would choke on it. And well, just a few weeks after that, both cows were dead. And if that wasn't proof, what is, right? And that was enough to have charges of witchcraft brought against her, and she ended up standing trial in 1656. There were other rumors about Eunice too, such as Thomas Coleman and his wife testifying that they heard Eunice repeat words that they had shared in private. Then other neighbors said that once they were discussing Eunice and how she might be responsible for a child's unfortunate death, and they heard something scrape against the windows, but they couldn't see anything or anyone out the window. So they figured it was a cat doing it, but not just any cat, one that Eunice had turned herself into in order to spy on her neighbors. Another neighbor, Joanna Sleeper, said that she had went to see one of her neighbors who was sick, and while she was over there, she saw a large cat come into the room, and the cat jumped on his chest, and that's when the man cried out that the cat was going to kill him, and later he died. Now, remember, they think Eunice can shapeshift, and that this cat was bigger than normal, so it had to be her. Also, she was seen close to his house earlier that day. And remember how she had been in trouble before? So when she was in trouble, she had got whipped. And apparently she had been put in those stocks where like they put you in the middle of the town. Mm-hmm. Your hands and your head are locked up, you know, and like kids throw tomatoes and cabbage at you. But when she had been whipped, she was undressed. And the man said that he saw a witch's mark on Eunice's body. So again, damning evidence, which we know a witch's mark is a fucking mole or a skin tag or something that's fucking natural. But they're like, it's like a teat from a witch. And all of them were convinced that she was a witch. And she was found guilty of familiarity with the devil and was actually imprisoned until 1660. Now, right before this, William, Eunice's husband, had petitioned the court to release his wife because he couldn't take care of their lands on their own, and the fees for the land went up. He needed help, and he was older than Eunice, so he was like in his late 80s. Now, the courts were like, nah, you're fine. However, since you can't take care of yourself, you'll need to change your will and leave it to a custodian, basically. Because it couldn't be left to Eunice because she was still in jail because they wouldn't let her out, remember? So he did change his will and he left it to one of their neighbors and he was going to be kind of given an allowance to live on, basically. Which just seems shitty. Like, oh, you can't take care of yourself? Cool, well, can't have your wife. I mean, I get that she was in jail, but she was in jail for fucking witchcraft.
Yeah.
And also, you have to change your will to give it to someone. Like, they had 40 acres of land and all of that. You know what I mean? That's a lot. But now, in 1662, Eunice had actually petitioned the courts for her own release due to her own old age. And she was like, I need to take care of my husband, all of that. And apparently, she did get released. It's kind of fuzzy. But in the following years after her trial, most of Thomas's family, the guy Thomas Philbrick, who said that she had cursed his cows. That was a lot of C's. His son, his daughter-in-law, and his granddaughter, as well as five others, ended up drowning in their boat. Like, their boat sank when they were going to Boston. Now, because of this tragedy, everyone turned their eyes to Eunice and said that she caused it to happen because it was like the ocean opened its mouth and swallowed them whole. And of course, Eunice would have been the one seeking revenge on Thomas, so they were certain of her guilt. Now, it wasn't long before Eunice was back in prison because she had called her neighbors bad words and basically said it wasn't right that other people were receiving aid and her husband didn't, you know, speaking up for injustices. So, you know, that was definitely witchcraft. Well, another thing, there was a testimony of Robert Smith and his wife, Susanna. Now, they said Eunice had enchanted their oven and they were never able to bake normally again. Now, this reminded me so much of Hannah Crana, another lady who was accused of being a witch, and she had cursed someone. I don't know if you remember this, but she had cursed someone because she was poor and she went by their house and they had pie on their, like, you know, like on all the fairy tales, like they have pie like cooling in the window and she wanted a piece, but they gave her a small piece and she wanted a big piece. And they said that she had cursed them after that and they were never able to do it. So I was like, what the fuck? Is this the same person? Just goes by a different name? But I looked everywhere and no, like they are two separate people. It's just the absurdity of these times and women who were strong-willed being, you know, convicted of witchcraft. So when Eunice saw Robert and Susanna, she saw them when they were going to grind their grain. And
they were going to grind their, like, that really grind my gears. Grinded, whatever the saying is, but that's what that sounded
yes.
like.
Yes. And lo and behold, you know, they passed Eunice. And she asked, like, oh, do you grind your rye? And they were like, duh, what else will we do, weirdo? Later on, they noticed that no matter what they did, their baked goods would stink. And it was so bad, like it wasn't normal. So that would only mean that Eunice had placed a curse upon their oven. It's like, maybe you just got a bad batch of rye. But,
right.
But of course, they passed Eunice and nope, nope, nope. It was her. Now, during this time, William, her husband, had passed. Around 1670, Eunice was released again from prison and was able to go back to Hampton again. But she had nowhere to return home, so the town built a hovel or a shack to house her. And now they had to supply her food and kindling for the fire, which is wild because it's like you convicted her of being a witch and, you know, you're trying to keep her away and all of this, but then you're forcing these people to do, like, I don't know.
To help her.
Yeah. And also, I feel like this wouldn't have had to happen had William been able to leave her the deed and all that. Or I don't know if they were doing this because he did leave the deed. And so, like, you know, how he had an allowance, maybe that kind of went on to her. I don't know. But basically, she was a ward of the state.
Well, maybe this wouldn't have had to happen if they hadn't put her in jail to begin with for being a witch.
1,000%. Then in 1672, Eunice was charged again for witchcraft.
These motherfuckers need to get a damn hobby.
They have a hobby.
Eunice.
Well, this time they had said that she had tried to entice a young girl named Anne Smith to live with her. She had appeared in various animal forms to persuade this girl to live with her. Also, apparently she had promised the girl a plum if she came and lived with her.
That's all it takes.
No, because Anne refused. When she refused, Eunice hit her on the head and then turned into a dog, ran up a tree, then became a bird and flew away.
Oh, I'm sure she did.
Now, Eunice was sent to Boston to await trial, but this time she was found not legally guilty of witchcraft, even though they said, we really think you are a witch, but like, we can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So you're going to get off this time.
Yeah, now they can't prove it.
Right. But also she had to stay in prison or in jail until trial, which was a while. That was a lot. But you know what I mean. Now, during this third time, she was accused of being a witch. She was also accused of basically stealing a child and leaving a changeling behind. Anna Dalton had said that her baby was changed by Eunice while it was laying in its cradle. So now Ezra, Anna's hubby, was like, nah, boo, that's our little turd in the cradle over there. But Anna was furious and again said that was not her child. She's quoted as saying, 'Tis an imp. Don't you see how old and shrewd it is? How wrinkled and ugly? It does not take my milk. It is sucking my blood and wearing me to skin and bone. Now, Ezra tried to calm her down, but Anna was determined that the child was not theirs. And one day she was sitting by the fireplace and she told Ezra to make the fire bigger and place their child in it. Because Eunice would then hear the fake child screaming, come and fly into the house and give them back their child.
Okay, hear me out. Is it possible she's got postpartum?
Very likely. Now, Ezra laid his hands on his wife and prayed that she could see clearly just how wrong she was because their little booger flicker was still in the cradle. And he prayed to God that please show his wife the way to the light. And a little bit after he continued praying, there was a gleam of light that came in and it circled the baby's face like a halo. And Anna gasped because she then recognized her baby again and all was well. Then Anna was like, oh shit, Eunice is in prison for this. And like, we need to plead for her release. And so for real, her and Ezra went and freed Eunice. Now in 1680, Eunice was 90 years old at this point.
Good God.
Yeah. Eunice was able to return to Hampton. But after a month of her returning home, Eunice passed away. Now, some people were walking by and noticed that there was no smoke coming from the chimney. And even though they were scared of the witch and they didn't want to do anything, they did go check on her because, you know, they were probably bringing her food or kindling, whatever. They found her body, but they didn't want to leave her body exposed. So it said that they quickly got a gang of people to come get her body and throw it in a nearby ditch. where they then drove a stake through her chest.
What?
Just to make sure she was good and dead. And then they also put a horseshoe on the end of the stake to ward off any revenge.
Why? Because she died of old age?
Don't ask me. I can't reason with these people.
I know, but I'm like, she's not going to come back for revenge against fucking just finally dying of old age.
But they're saying, like, because she cursed them all before.
Yeah, well, maybe it'll be shit to her and she won't curse you.
No, completely agree. But supposedly that didn't work because Frank Fogg and his family, they claim that their pigs and their cows were being spooked by something and just everything was acting weird. Well, just so happens that the Fogg family had moved to the land where the hovel Eunice used to live was located. And so everyone had deemed that haunted land. So they're saying that it was actually Eunice's spirit that was, you know, spooking their animals.
She's just become this catch-all for every bad thing that happens in this area. They're like, Eunice.
Absolutely. And people still believe that Eunice Goody Cole still haunts the town of Hampton. Now, there's people who said that they have witnessed an older lady who, like, they hadn't seen before, who had blue eyes, just like Eunice did, and her hair was gray, and she was disheveled. And the strange woman asked where the memorial for Goody Cole was. But when she would find out that there's not a memorial, every time she got mad. And I'm like, is she a Leo? Because that sounds like something that I would do.
Yeah, and maybe just make her a fucking memorial then.
Right?
It's that simple. If she keeps coming by, just be like, yeah, we got one. Here's one. Fucking paper mache or goddamn name on it. And she's none the wiser. She's a goddamn ghost.
So another time, there was this police officer who had seen an elderly woman walking. So he stopped to ask where she was going and, like, to tell her, you know, be wary of your surroundings. And this woman said, I've been walking these roads for hundreds of years. Because at this point it was, you know, it was like 1938 when this happened. So he was, like, doing something with his flashlight. And when he went to get back to his car and he, like, did his flashlight again, he couldn't find the woman. It was like she had just vanished and there's no way that, you know, she could move that fast. She was that elderly and all of that.
Yeah, she's 300 years old.
Now, there's several occasions like this where people said that they would talk to her and she would vanish. There was one couple that said that they invited her into the house for a cold drink on a hot summer night and that she was actually really nice and everything. So they didn't think that was Eunice. That couldn't have been Goody Cole. But then their only clue that she was Eunice or a ghost is that she walked through the door without bothering to open it when she left. Now, for real, in 1938, it was the 300th anniversary of Hampton as a town. And so there is a group with a ridiculously long name that was shortened to the Goody Cole Society. It was formed to clear her name. Now, seriously, the ridiculously long name, are you ready for it? It was the Society in Hampton Beach for the Apprehension of Those Falsely Accusing Eunice Goody Cole of Having Familiarity with the Devil.
I mean, it's descriptive.
Right? I'm like, SEO, they knew what they were doing back then.
Right? You definitely know what they stand for.
Anyway, they organized this town meeting and it was passed that Eunice Cole was a rightful citizen of Hampton and they ended up burning her copies of court documents and then they put those ashes with some of the dirt from her old home and placed it in an urn to be buried. But it was later donated to the Tuck Museum and the Tuck Museum now has like basically a boulder that is a memorial to Eunice. One person there who was fighting for Eunice was the widow of Harry Houdini.
Damn.
I was like, that's so odd, but I saw that in a newspaper clipping and I was like, yep, writing that down. Now, this historian from Hampton, Joseph, he referred to Eunice as, quote, ill-natured and ugly, artful and aggravating, malicious and revengeful, but certainly not a witch. Also, something to note that Eunice Goody Cole was the only woman to be condemned as a witch in New Hampshire.
Tell me why I feel like every time you're going to say, you know, Goody Two Shoes. Like every time that's what I'm waiting on and you don't say it.
Well, see, she was evil witch. So the Goody Two Shoes would have been the good witch.
But like, why is that what my head goes to?
I don't know.
Okay, sorry. So she was the only one convicted what now in New Hampshire?
Yeah. But my God, they made up for it.
They convicted
her so many fucking times.
You know, she was convicted the same amount of times as like the entire Salem witch trials.
Right? And like, they just kept doing it. I just feel so bad for her because, I mean, her husband, they were both older when they got over here. They weren't spring chickens. They had lived a hard life. They had worked so hard and, you know, finally had some kind of hope. And then because Eunice was not the nicest person, and that's okay if you're, I mean, be a nice person, but like, it's okay if you're different or, you know, like you don't want to be sociable or whatever, but...
Yeah, you don't, that's the thing. You don't have to be nice. Like, I don't have to be overtly nice to you. As long as I'm not just, I mean, don't be mean. But
right.
Just because I'm not like, hey, how's it going? How you mama doing? Like, just because she's like fucking Eeyore, doesn't, who cares?
Yes. Like, it doesn't mean anything. And like, she literally was just like, are you going to grind your rye? And they're like, duh. Oh my God, she cursed us.
Right. I'm like, maybe you're the asshole.
Right.
And she was just checking in, trying to be friendly because she was like, these people keep thinking I'm an asshole. Let me be nice. And then
bless
the time she's
heart.
Nice, they're like, oh, she fucking cursed our grinds.
Well, yeah. Just think about it. Like, if she did have any type of, like,
what if she was on the spectrum
for real? But
and like, she was being as nice as she possibly could, like as much as she was capable of.
Yeah,
but she was in fucking sensory overload every time y'all have a goddamn hoedown,
right? And yeah, just thought about that. Like, that's so sad. If she was like walking and like, what can I say to them? What can I say to them? I'm gonna be nice. I'm gonna be nice. And then she gets fucking accused of being a witch for literally just walking by someone and speaking to them. But also, like, every time back in the day when they talk about these fucking people who are supposedly witches, it's always strong-willed women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow. You know, you think things have changed, but they really haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just can't get away with calling us witches now.
Yeah, you just call us bitches.
That's the fucking truth.
What is it that Taylor Swift says? She says she's calculated. And like, if like a woman does it, they're calculating. If a man does it, they're strategic.
Yes.
Same shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're literally same shit, different verse.
Right. And it's just as wild now. It's just, it seems so like, oh my God, because she's getting convicted of being a witch. But like, literally, it's the same, like you said, same shit, different verse. And we don't have to be pretty, okay? And not even just like pretty, but like well kempt and all of the things.
Trust me, I'm not.
Me either.
If you don't believe me, just join us on one of the Am I the Assholes on Patreon.
Same.
Because I come straight from work and do that shit. And so that's what I look like when I leave work. Well, before we get into my story, we got to talk about Lumi. We may be unkempt, but let me just tell you, we don't smell that way.
Because we have a not-so-secret weapon, because we use Lumi deodorant. You know, I've said it 1,000 times. What's my favorite smell?
Toasted coconut.
That's right.
Dang, we're like conditioned to be like, toasted coconut. If you don't know what we're talking about, we are talking about Lumi, which is a deodorant that is powered by mandelic acid to help control odor in a completely new way. Lumi delivers 72 hours of odor control literally everywhere on your body. I'm talking your pits, your feet, your family jewels, your vajayjay. I'm talking everywhere.
Lumi really is a whole body deodorant.
So originally, Lumi was created by an OBGYN. And she was like, look, body odor does not just come from the pits. It can come from everywhere. And we got to help people do something about that. So fast forward 6 years, and there are now over 300,000 five-star reviews from people just like us being like, oh my God, I love this stuff and I want everyone to know.
Because if you feel like you have body odor, you're definitely not confident and you're just preoccupied with, oh my God, is that me? Well, with Lumi, you don't have to worry about it.
And like I said, because it's pH balanced, it is safe to use literally everywhere. You can use it under your arms, under your boobs, in your folds, your belly button, your booty crack, literally everywhere. And even better, it's baking soda free and paraben free. And there's lots of different ways that you can use Lumi deodorant. They have stick deodorant that you think of when you think of deodorant. They have body washes. They have lotions. They have wipes. They have everything to stop odor in its tracks. Think more pre-odorant.
And y'all know we live in Mississippi and y'all know it gets hot, but we don't have to worry about BO because we have Lumi Deo.
And y'all, I was using Lumi long before they became a sponsor of this podcast. I had an unscented stick of deodorant, but now I've got all the scents because I have a Lumi starter pack. What's that, you ask? It comes with a solid stick of deodorant, a cream tube deodorant, which is really what I was talking about when I said lotion earlier. I just stuck at words. And then you get two free products of your choice. So, like I said before, maybe you want a little mini body wash. Maybe you want a deodorant. You get to pick two free products, and it all comes with free shipping. And right now, new customers can get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code CREEP at LumiDeodorant.com.
Again, that is LumiDeodorant.com with the code CREEP for $5 off of your Lumi starter pack.
Y'all, that equates to over a 40% savings on a starter pack. So don't sleep on this. Head on over to LumiDeodorant.com and use promo code CREEP. Okay, so for my story, I was doing my thing, sleeping, well, about to go to sleep, y'all, and I heard this story. Colby came to bed and I said, text me this name. And he was like, why? And I'm like, because I'm doing this story. Because, you know, I'm not rolling over and getting my phone. He's like, I thought you were asleep. And I was like, I'm listening. Okay, picture it. We're heading over to St. Cloud, Florida. What do you picture every time I say St. Cloud? I mean, I've said it one time, but you get the point.
Well, first I thought the Kissimmee or whatever.
Okay, that's a place, yes.
But like, you know, it would be like Kissimmee, St. Cloud, Florida. I think it was something like, I don't know. It was a commercial.
Yeah.
But also there's a movie with
Zac Efron?
Yes.
Yes. That the whole time I was like, please say it, Donna. Please say it, Donna. Don't know what it's called. Did I look it up? No. But do y'all know what we're talking about? Maybe. Yeah. They like play baseball in the woods.
Yeah.
Somebody's dead.
Is it Charlie? No.
Charlie St. Cloud?
Yeah.
Charlie Cloud, maybe their last name.
I don't know.
Could we Google it? We could. Are we? No.
But we both thought about it.
Yes. Okay. So we're talking about Norma Page. Norma is married to Jim Page, who is a pastor at the Church of the Nazarene. The two of them had met in high school in Orlando, and they were living in St. Cloud at the time because, well, this was actually Jim's first congregation to be the minister of. They had two sons, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. Now, this story takes place in 1979, so no texting, no cell phones. And Norma had been writing her sister letters, who lived in West Virginia. And she talked a lot about how basically great life was. They were super excited about the church and it was growing. And she loved being a mom and raising her boys because she felt like it was a really safe community. But she was leery of strangers because this isn't where she grew up. On June 22nd of 1979, Jim was off on like a week-long retreat for pastors, and Norma was at home with the kids. Now, they lived in the parsonage, so it was a place that, you know, if somebody needed something or whatever, they just stopped by a lot. So they had a lot of people that kind of would come and go at the house. On this day, a neighbor notices two little boys running to his house. And when they get there, he realizes, like, hold on a second. This is the Page boys. Like, this is the preacher's kids. And keep in mind, they're 4 and 2. So, like, where are they going?
Right.
The first thing the little boy says is, someone is hurting my mom.
Oh, my gosh.
So, the neighbor is like, hold the phone, loads the kids up, hauls ass over to the parsonage, and is like, knock, 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 what's going on? Well, when he knocks on the door, nobody answers. So he starts to kind of look around and sees that the house is in complete disarray. So he starts walking down the hall to be like, hey, hello, anybody home? The four-year-old says, like, she's, like, down there. When the neighbor gets to the kid's bedroom, he sees 28-year-old Norma Page lying on the bed, naked, covered in blood.
Oh, fuck.
Now, this is where I'm going to tell you, like, what happened to her. So if you need to skip forward, like, 30 seconds or so. Norma was lying on her stomach, and she had been bound and gagged. Her feet were tied to her son's bed.
Wow.
And her hands were tied behind her back. There were 34 stab wounds along her neck, and there was a broken glass ketchup bottle that, like, appeared to be something that maybe the person just grabbed or whatever, that had, like, ketchup and glass everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
So the neighbor, of course, immediately calls police. Police get there, and they start looking around the crime scene, and it was actually kind of hard because there was so much ketchup everywhere that it kind of made it hard to isolate the blood. And they couldn't find a murder weapon. Like, there was no knife at the scene. They looked at a few, of course, collected a few, but there was no knife at the scene. There were, for sure, though, a couple of places, like, on a tag of a shirt. There was, like, a bathing suit top in the sink in the bathroom. So there were some places where they were really able to isolate some blood. And then there was a trail of items literally leading from the house. And those, like a kitchen towel, stuff like that, that it looked like the killer had been using and just, like, dropped as he left. And those had some blood on it as well. Now, there was no evidence of a break-in, like, no forced entry. But they were like, okay, that's not completely abnormal given that this was a pastor's house. Like, she probably would have opened the door for anybody because who knows who's coming for help at a pastor's house.
I could not live that life.
No.
Like, I have anxiety knowing people are coming, being like, okay, when are they going to get here? When are they going to do this? You know.
Is my house clean? Yes. Do I have a bra on?
Yes. Like, how could you ever just be comfortable? Because you would have to be
ready all the time. I know. Well, and they have two young kids. So you know that their house is not perfectly clean all the time. Like, even if it's clean, it's got toys everywhere, you know? And surely people are understanding of that. But, you know, some people aren't. Some people going to talk and be like, did you see the preacher's house? It was so dirty when we went over there to ask for prayers.
Right. That person would be you.
I mean, maybe. But I'd be like, I mean, mine's way worse, but did you see? No, I'm the type of person, I would notice it, but I would never judge you for it. You know, my house is a disaster, though. No, I say this is why I'm terrified of, like, getting murdered and that happening to me, because my house would be messy.
Like theirs.
Yes.
But you're judging them.
No, I'm saying this is why I don't want this to happen to me, because this is what mine would look like. Now, I told y'all that her husband was away at, like, a pastor's retreat. And the police had to call him while he was there to tell him, like, your wife was murdered. Like, can you imagine getting that phone call and feeling so helpless and being so far away? And then, like, okay, what about the kids? And, you know, how that had to have been so freaking awful for him. Now, police turned to the kids to see, like, what in actual fuck happened? Because clearly the kids saw something, because they ran from the house to get help. And they find out that Norma told them to. Like, while Norma was being attacked, she told the kids, like, run to a neighbor's house. So even when she is being brutally murdered, she's still protecting her kids.
Gosh.
Now, the oldest was actually able to help police. He was able to tell police a description. Now, I'm sure in a four-year-old way, I'm sure he wasn't like, so he was a tall man with mutton chops and he had on a Western shirt, which is literally what he told him. But, like, I'm sure he had a different, you know, a four-year-old version of telling it.
Yeah.
But this is how police described it.
That, well, I'm glad, because, you know, normally when I say that a young kid saw something and they tell their mom, you're like, how would they voice that about a ghost?
Yeah, but this is a four-year-old.
These people are four, too.
Well,
I know, different day, different thing.
Different day, different carry.
But I'm just saying, you heard it here.
But that's also very different, though. someone hurting your mom versus a ghost.
That ghost might have been hurting them.
So the son describes the man being tall, really and truly what I said a second ago, tall with mutton chops. He was wearing a Western style shirt and had a tattoo on his arm.
Which arm?
I don't fucking know.
Oh, okay.
But I'm like, this fucking 4-year-old is like the best eyewitness ever. Like, this kid is a star. Like, he is like, holy shit that he remembers this much detail.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, he also remembers that before the man hurt his mom, made them get in the car and go to the bank.
Oh, shit.
Also, I am intentionally not saying the kids' names just because they were kids at the time. So, and I only saw their names in one article. So anyway, just wanted to point that out. The police go to the bank and they talk to a teller that was working the drive-thru, and they find out that, yeah, between like 12 and 12:30, that Norma had come to the bank and cashed two checks. One was like for $8 and one was for, I think, $200. So I'm not really sure why the two checks and why the different amounts.
Maybe she had like a transaction like limit.
Maybe, but still, $208 is bizarre.
Well, fuck if I know.
So the teller actually supports what the son says. The teller says that there was a man in the passenger seat that had mutton chops, brown hair, and a Western style shirt.
What is a Western style shirt?
Like, you know, like picture like a shirt that you would wear with like cowboy boots.
Okay.
Like button up. Imagine like colorful.
I was gonna say like the colorful, like the triangle kind of thing. Okay.
So the police know now that the man had been in Norma's car. So they start to process her car. They find fingerprints outside of the car and on the inside of the car. So police run the fingerprints that they had found, and they actually had a match to someone in town. His name is Lester J. Bass. Now, he goes by Jay. So Jay Bass is a 22-year-old, and he worked at a gas station. Now, some stuff was like he was a gas station attendant, but then some stuff was like he was a gas station custodian, but I don't think it matters.
I feel like those could have been the same back in the day.
Yeah, probably. It is 1979. So Jay was actually kind of known about town. He was known because he had like this hot rod of a car that kind of got him into some trouble. And he had been arrested before. But he had only been arrested once. And he was arrested for stealing a Christmas tree. So like nothing in his past would indicate that he would sexually assault and murder someone.
Right.
This is a pretty big leap, you know?
Yeah.
And then police, you know, doing their due diligence was like, okay, works at a gas station. Maybe he helped with like some maintenance or something on the car. Maybe that explains his fingerprints. And her husband was like, no, this is a pretty new car and they had never taken it in for maintenance. So police were like, okay, well that, you know, you can't like, that takes some of the reasonable doubt away of him working at a gas station and, you know, that kind of, okay, let's check that box of something that they can't use against him. And guess what? He had mutton chops and wore Western shirts, whatever the fuck those are, according to Donna. But there was one problem. Remember, her son remembered a tattoo and Jay didn't have a tattoo. So the police bring him in for questioning. Now, he only lived about 5 miles away from Norma and he lived with his girlfriend. But during the hours in which Norma had to have been killed, his girlfriend had actually left the house. And so he was alone. And then he was super weird during the interview. Like literally he said to the police, I'm not saying I did it. I'm not saying I didn't do it. I don't remember.
Wait.
What?
What?
What? So the interview was like super weird. Now the police did, because of course this is like huge news that Norma had been murdered. Like there hadn't been a murder here in like 500 years or something. Not really, but this was like the first murder in a long time. So it like broke news everywhere. Everybody was involved. So people were going to police if they were witnesses and all of that.
Well, and then it's a pastor's wife.
Correct. So that in itself brings a whole different level of notoriety. So police had a few witnesses that say actually they had seen a man around the parsonage standing outside with Norma, getting out of the car, that kind of thing. And they all identified him as Jay Bass. So between the witnesses, the kid, the fingerprints, police take all this information to the state's attorney to be like, okay, like, let's do this. Let's arrest him and charge him. And the state's attorney was like, no, this is all circumstantial. Like, we're not going to bite on this. Like, you got to go back and find more direct evidence to convict him. And so everybody was like, wait, what? They're not going to press charges on him? And time just went on and on and on. Police weren't able to find more evidence. And eventually, because of the cloud of suspicion, because everybody's like, fucking Jay Bass did this. Like, everybody in town, Jay Bass and his girlfriend end up having to leave town because people were like, he did this. Like, I saw him there. He did this. They have his fingerprints. But for some reason, the state's attorney won't let them charge him.
Yeah.
But the state's attorney wanted to make sure that they had a slam dunk case because you only get one shot at it right. With a murder trial. So because they left town, people were even more like, why the fuck would he leave town? Like, clearly he's guilty if he's leaving town. So this case ends up going cold. And I mean cold. This case goes cold for decades. And about 30 years later.
Holy shit. The kids are not kids anymore.
Right. Can you guess what show I watch this on now?
No.
On the Case of Paula's on.
Oh.
If I'd have told you, you would have known how this show went.
No.
Oh, all the episodes are like this.
Oh, okay. I'm like, no.
They're literally all like this. It's like how Snapped is like always that person. It's like Paula Zahn is always the case happens, it goes cold, and then they figure it out.
Mm.
So one of Norma had three sisters, I think. And on the Case with Paula Zahn, one of her sisters is there like telling the story and everything. So her family's really involved, you know, in the case and getting her name out there and all. But a cousin, her name was Cheryl Hickman, and this part about Cheryl was specifically on Paula Zahn. So she reached out to one of Norma's sisters, like on Facebook or something, and was like, wait, hold on. They still haven't, like, this case is still cold. Nobody's working on this. Like, I cannot believe this thing isn't solved yet. Send me everything. Well, Cheryl was a nurse, and she was like, hang on. They never tested the DNA. Like, this is, I know that this happened in 1979, but like, we're in the 2000s now. Let's come on with this. She had a friend who was in law enforcement, and she sent it to him and was like, bro, can you believe this? Like, can you look at this? Can you let me know what you think? And they were like, wait, what? They've not tested anything? So the friend reaches out to the St. Cloud Police Department and was like, what y'all think about running some of this testing on this now that it's been so long, you know? We've made progress in DNA, all the things. What do you think about, you know, opening this case back up? So the St. Cloud Police Department was like, good on ya. We're going to do that. So they bring in this new detective. Pretty sure this was his first murder case. And he was like, wait, why in the hell did they never charge Jay Bass? Like, what? So they do some testing on the evidence. And the couple of things, like I told you, the top that they had found, the bathing suit top, and then the tag of one of the son's shirts, the blood on that had DNA of the assailant. So they actually go out of town and get Jay Bass's DNA so that they can compare it to the DNA that was left at the crime scene. Now, when they get that back, it did not match.
Oh, fuck.
And it's like, what? Jay Bass was like the perfect suspect. He looked like the guy that the son fucking described. His fingerprints were in the car. Like, not just on the outside of like, hey, let me lean in. Do you want me to fill her up? Like, on the rearview mirror and stuff like that. Like, this shit was in the car. And he had lived under a cloud of suspicion for 30 years.
Oh my God.
And it wasn't him. Like, can you imagine if that state attorney had actually taken that to trial? Like, that would have easily, especially in 1979, convicted him. Like, 1,000%, he would have been in jail for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And he was actually innocent the whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
So the police pull the fingerprints out to retest them to say, like, what, how, and they had gotten it wrong. Those were never his fingerprints.
What?
Yeah. Because remember, it's 79. Like, picture them using like a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
It's not like they're running this shit through computers. You know, this is like a human. Yeah. And so it just makes you go like, how many errors?
Oh my gosh.
Have they had in fingerprint analysis back in the day when it was actually a person scanning it through?
Yeah. But also it's like, if that is the only evidence you have, I feel like you would have looked at it so many times, had mm-hmm. different people look at it. And I get, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just like,
you're wanting to make fetch happen.
Yeah.
But it's like, that was concrete evidence back then. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, circumstantial in the, you can't prove when those fingerprints got there. So that's why it's circumstantial. But back then, that was a smoking gun, just like DNA is a smoking gun now. And it's like, how many people were convicted off of their fingerprints being in or around a crime scene?
Oh, so sad to think about.
And were they all right? And that's what's so hard about, like, convicting people. That's why I, like, with the death penalty is so hard for me, because, I mean, other than somebody's eye, but it's like, if there is a chance that they are innocent, like, I just, it's too risky.
Yeah.
So the DNA didn't match Jay Bass, but they have a DNA profile of the person who is responsible. So the police put that information into the national database, CODIS, and they fucking get a hit. His name is Stephen Bronson, and he lives just 10 miles from the police station.
Oh my gosh.
As Paula Zahn said, like, I literally said it like her. Okay, so Stephen Bronson is a piece of fucking shit. He had multiple arrests, stuff ranging from burglary, aggravated assault, rape, fucking attempted murder. I mean, and like I said, he's like 10 miles away from everything.
Yeah.
And when this happened, he was never on the police's radar at all, which is kind of shocking given his history. Like, you would think they'd be like, okay, who are some criminals in the area? Like, okay, him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's, whatever. Well, at this point, when police bring Stephen Bronson in, he's like in his early 60s. He's like 62, 63. Saw it a couple of different ages, a couple of different places.
So he's fucking lived his life.
Right. And he kind of talks to police a little bit. And long story short, when they start saying like, bro, we got your DNA at the thing, he's like, cool, cool. It was me. And basically, it was a crime of opportunity. He said that he drove by, saw her hanging some clothes outside because she had just done laundry, pulls up into the driveway, forces her to go to the bank. And when they get back, he grabs a ketchup bottle and starts to attack her. But then that's kind of where the confession stops. He says, like, he never actually says he killed her. He says that that's where the attack starts. But he doesn't say that he killed her. But he does say, I don't really know what happened. I just went crazy.
Mm.
So now the problem is that he's not that old, but he ain't in that good of health. So his attorneys do the Golden State Killer of it all and bring him into the courtroom for his pretrial hearing on a fucking stretcher.
Oh, Lord.
And they're like, look, he's had multiple strokes. He is mentally deficient. Like, he is incompetent to stand trial. The judge fucking agrees.
Oh, my gosh.
So Norma's family's fucking pissed. They're like, the sister on Paula Zahn, her quote, which I was like, Donna's going to love this quote because it rhymes. But she's like, the judges focus more on the criminal's needs instead of the criminal's deeds.
Yes.
But they literally, because the judge ruled him unfit to stand trial, they had no choice but to release him to a nursing home. This is where his life's bad deeds, though, kind of catch up with him. Because when the police had brought him in for questioning, he had been a resident at a nursing home for like 7 to 8 years already. Again, I saw different numbers. When he was arrested, they like took him to jail for a little while, like awaiting trial. And I think I saw somewhere where they had spent like $30,000 in his medical care while he was in jail, awaiting the trial, which was the pretrial, to be like, he's not fit to stand trial. So he really had strokes. And I think it was his left side that was paralyzed. And he had been living in a nursing home for like 8 years. But when he was arrested, that nursing home was like, we're not fucking taking him back. Like, we had no idea who he was. And we had actually had problems with him because he had been, like, he had threatened staff before to, like, hurt them or kill them or whatever. Which, look, if you've worked with the elderly, especially somebody that's had a stroke or someone that's got dementia or some sort of, like, neurological disorder like that where they aren't themselves, like, they're going to say things. They're going to be like, I'm going to hit you. I'm going to kill you. I've had patients tell me that before. And it's like, okay, they have dementia. They're not themselves. But they're like, this motherfucker's actually done it. No thanks. We're not taking him back.
Right.
We had no idea he had been in prison for rape, for murder, or excuse me, attempted murder. And then y'all just arrested him for fucking murder. No thanks. Don't want him. So then 40 more nursing homes refused to take him.
Oh, shit.
Well, eventually someone did. And less than a year after he went to that nursing home, he died. So even though they were right and that he was going to die rather quickly, it still sucks for Norma's family because they literally got no justice. None. None at all.
Right.
I mean, at least they know. I mean, at least, air quotes, they know who did it. But he spent, I don't know, however long in jail that it took them to, you know, and he got to live 30 fucking years. Now, not all of it was out free because he was assaulting, raping, and attempting to murder other fucking people and had spent time in jail. And it's like, had they had the tools and all of that to catch him when he killed Norma, all those other people may have been spared.
Right.
And that, I'm not saying that the police did something wrong. I mean, well, they did. They did the fingerprints wrong, but also...
For the time,
yes, they did the best they could. Yeah. But... It's still all those other people could have been spared if they would have had the tools that of today.
Yeah. And he literally got to live his life being a terrible human being.
Right.
And didn't really have to face any consequence.
I know. I just don't understand how he was out to begin with. Like, I just don't understand why attempted murder doesn't carry the same weight as a murder.
Right.
Like, so you get out early because you sucked, like,
right,
because you couldn't finish.
Right. Or the victim overpowered you.
Yeah. And survived. Like, what?
Yeah. I hate that. It makes me so mad.
Yeah. Like, you were going to hire somebody or you poisoned them or you attacked them with a knife or whatever. And it's like, they just happened to survive. And so you get to get out and live a life. Like,
yeah, it's not fair.
Conversely, though, I have such a hard time because y'all know that sometimes I take it, not sometimes, I always take it back to money. And it's like, okay, how is he living in that nursing home? Like, who's paying for that too? Because, I mean, we'd be paying for this either way. Like, is he on Medicaid in the nursing home? Because that's what most people are on. Because that's what the long-term care insurance is. You know, if something happened to me and I had to go to a nursing home, like, I would have to be on Medicaid, you know? So it's like, I don't know. Because that's not fair, you know? So it's like, I have such a conflict, like an internal conflict of what is the social justice of it,
mm-hmm.
because it's not fucking fair to Norma's family that he gets to live his life out in a fucking nursing home with getting taken care of. But on the other side, he's still a human and shouldn't be just put on, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's such a social
conundrum.
Yes. In my heart, you know?
Yeah.
My little Grinch size heart. Mm-hmm. Norma's sisters are working to get some legislation out in Norma's name that will make it mandatory for it to be known, like in this case where he was in this nursing home for 8 years and nobody knew that he had been, you know, this violent sex offender and attempted murderer.
Yeah.
That, like, you have to announce it, and like the residents and the staff should know who you are and what you did. So like they're working towards legislation for that.
Wow.
And again, I am very torn because I don't know. I keep repeating the same thing, but I just, the human side of me versus the, no, fuck him. He's a murderer, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's hard because like you want, like it's a right for everyone to know who they live around. And like, he is dangerous. He has been convicted of this, but also, you know, telling people that can put people to where they're going to do terrible things. And it's like, they also don't deserve what those people are going to do to them either.
But I agree. But also, well, neither did their victims.
Right.
You know, so, but it's also like, but then that makes you know better because you're hurting the, you know?
Yeah. Well, and especially like if they've done their time, like we say, and all of that, it's like we have to.
Yeah. Which he hadn't. But yeah. But yes. Well, and in his case, I mean, he really had had like a massive stroke and was pretty disabled at this point, like completely paralyzed on the left side and total care at this point. Like he's, I mean, maybe combative, but he's not, I mean, he wouldn't have been able to hurt someone in the way that it brings fear to you,
yeah.
You know? But I mean, you still have to be on guard. I mean, he still could take a fucking swing at you.
Yeah.
As could any patient though.
Yeah, that's it's hard. This is why I can't be a, like a lawyer. I shouldn't be on the jury. I shouldn't because it's so hard. Justice is so hard.
But in this case, though, fuck him because Norma is the one who got no justice.
Right. And then her kids having to see that, having to.
I know. And then like they were trying to get the charges dropped against him so that he could be placed in a nursing home and stuff. And it's like. Even if they drop the charges, it's not going to change the fact of what he did.
Yeah.
Well, y'all let us know what y'all think about these cases because they were doozies that people had, I mean, injustices left and right.
Yeah, really was. I don't know why I went so deep on that one, but.
Yeah, it really was.
Like that?
Yeah.
Thank y'all so much for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.